I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there. Hello and welcome to the Mark Groves podcast. Recently, I was listening to a podcast episode from one of my favorite guys, Jason Gaddis, from the Relationship School. And you want to check out that podcast. You know, they dive into the things, he dives into the things like you and I do here. And I was listening to an episode that he did with Rezma Menakan, and I was blown away by it. Honestly, it was just like so incredible. I was moved like on a body level by the words of Rezma. And Jason did such a great job of interviewing. I first heard about Rezma's work when I had the pleasure of being led and taught by Kelly Germain and Kelly Elizabeth in a program called Energetic Justice, and it was called Orientation, and they offer that. The link's in the show notes. It was incredible. And just deepening my understanding of how to be part of and understand and support BIPOC-led movements for justice. And I dove immediately after listening to the podcast with Jason into Rezma's book, My Grandmother's Hands, and I reached out to him and asked if he would be so kind as to come on the podcast and just channel that fire. Like, honestly, I can't say enough about this podcast. For 90 minutes, I was moved. You just can't listen to Rezma and your body not shift just due to the truth that is being shared. And a perspective that I had explored and begun to understand on a deeper level due to the excellent facilitation of the program Orientation with Kelly Elizabeth and Kelly Germain. And this, just being able to be in his presence and just feel the passion and the truth and like the resonance for me, it's incredible. So I can't say enough about the need to listen to this whole podcast episode and just explore what it brings up for you. I just want to continue to be part of these conversations because they matter so much. This is how we create a world and communities that are about curiosity and exploration and reparation and reverence. And that is the world I want to be part of. So I am part of it, and I am creating it with you and with Rezma. So before we begin, let me just first tell you a little bit more about Rezma. He's a healer. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He's a trauma specialist. In his about section, I'm just going to read it out to you because it's fantastic. Moving from race to culture to creation is important, transformative, and takes work and a lot of reps. I help people, communities, and organizations find strength and healing that is holistic and resilient. Together, let's set a course for healing historical and racialized trauma carried in the body and the soul. I'm a healer. I help people rise through the suffering's edge. I'm a cultural trauma navigator. I am a communal provocateur and coach. I consider it my job in this moment to make the invisible visible. Let's do that. Without further ado, here's Rezma Menachem. Well, I want to start by saying I was introduced to your work through the Kellys, and I did the orientation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like I found I was the only, I was one of two men in the group and the only straight man.
Okay.
And I, what was noticed upon that was the lack of white straight males, but I want to say even men within the group.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I first started to be exposed to your work, I was sort of, you know, at the, I'd say like just beyond the gateway. Not going to give myself too much credit there. You put an experience of my, like my body needed to hear what you had to say. And then hearing you speak on Jason Gaddis's podcast, I just felt this like, I have to get your straight talk and soul fire to my audience. I just had to get it because I love the truth, even though the truth is not always comfortable. I love it because it frees me. And I can't say enough just about being able to hear your voice and to have this honor. So thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. I mean, this is right now, this is all I can do, man, is to try and kind of bring something to the work that is not just, okay, why don't you just do this three times and you'll be not racist? Or why don't you do this and go to a, you know what I mean? I didn't see too much. I didn't experience too much, and my people have experienced too much for me. You know, I was talking, so I'm writing my next book right now. And I was talking with my agent today, and I told him, I said, man, when I die, when we die, I want the work that we've done. I want a generation from now. To me, this work for me is about nine generations long. And I want a generation from now, some white boy or some black girl or indigenous girl going into a library and just, you know, just moving around, gotta get this paper done on race or whatever. And coming upon my book or coming upon our books and go, I feel better. I feel better. This makes me feel better. I'm all right. I'm not crazy. I'm not defective. I gotta do something. Somebody already said it. Okay. That's the whole reason why I'm writing right now. That's the whole reason why I'm you know, if you look at my stuff out here online, I do so much free stuff. I mean, I give a lot
of free sources on your site.
Everything. And the reason why I'm doing that is I just feel like, man, that, you know, the ancestors have provided me and with the ability to take care of my family. My family's going to be fine. My family will be fine in terms of economics. I still worry about my 20-year-old son getting in the car and driving, and then me not hearing from him for a while and thinking, "Fuck, where's he at? Okay, what's happening? What's going on?" I still do that with my 36-year-old daughter. Right, I sit there and I go, "Okay, did some motherfucker just like hurt them?" Because, you know what I mean? I just got off the phone earlier today with a sister of mine who's a therapist, and she was down in Texas driving, and she said before the snow hit, she was going to try and drive back to Maryland. She's from Texas, but she's going to drive back to Maryland. She's driving there, and she says as she's driving there, she's going into some back roads because the snow is getting so bad. And this horror and terror started coming over her, like if I roll off into one of these ditches in the backwoods of Arkansas, who's gonna come get me? What's gonna happen? And so she's driving along, man, and then she decides I'm gonna pull off and go to a hotel. So she's driving along, she gets ready to pull off, she has to go through some other back roads to get to this hotel, and this white boy rides up behind her. This just happened. this white boy rides up behind her and comes in close and is honking the horn and doing all this stuff. So not only is she dealing with this white boy behind her, but now she's dealing with the historical stuff of what that means. And that's happening real time right there in her body. And our move in our bodies and black bodies is to immediately override that type of stuff in order to survive, override it, get through it, move. Right. And I had and when I was talking to her today, I just called her just to check on her. When I was talking to her today, one of the first things I had to do was tell her, ain't nothing wrong with you. Mm-hmm. You ain't defective. What nothing wrong with you? She said, I felt like I was going to not be here. I felt like I was going to die. And I said, you know why you feel like that? And she said, yeah, well, no. And I said, well, one of the reasons why you experienced that is because you came from a people who that experience, that vibe, that I'm going to die, that even if nothing ain't happening right now, that something might happen, a lot of times saved our lives.
Yeah, that vigilance.
So that shit got passed all the way down. And I said, and ain't nothing wrong with you. When I said that, she started crying. And I said, you need to keep doing more of that. And you need to wail. You need to cry. You need to drink some bad. You need to get some Crown Royal. You need to drink some bad fucking food. You need to watch some Bridgerton. You need to watch whatever the fuck you got to do. Right? It's all right. Do that shit. And I got you. And that's the difference for me between mental health and mental healing. Mental healing for the black body is a lifelong process of us watching, tuning in to the resource vibe and helping each other through this brutality of everyday living in this bullshit.
I think so many of us as white folks don't even like your book. What it did for me in a lot of ways was put into context, not just my own somatic experience, my own body response to potentially unconscious biases, and also that constriction, because I did all
That's
the somatic
it.
Work
it.
That you walk us through.
Right.
And I felt like this relationship to these subtleties that I hadn't, it was so beautiful. And I, and even just how it's so, it hijacks you without you even knowing. And you talk about microaggressions.
That's it.
And so I think just to give some people some context, so Resman's book is called My Grandmother's Hands, but you have another book that's about relational conflict, and
yeah, man,
and that could be a whole other.
That's my beast. That was my first one. That was my rock the boat. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, of course, that is so relevant, actually, mm-hmm. to the work, because, of course, our somatic response is so historical within our relational experience. But what I really appreciate, you speak, this is not a book that's about just personal growth, quote unquote.
Yes,
this
right.
is about,
right.
this is the work.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you talk about the vagus nerve and you call it the soul nerve. And mm-hmm. and that to me, I was like, thank you. Like bringing that bridge of science to soul. And we've made things so scientific that we've forgotten. And so yeah. Can you speak a bit to like, what is the premise of the cultural somatics and then
yeah.
and how that vagal nerve, and then I want to dive into, because I felt my body shift when you talked about clean pain versus dirty pain.
Yeah,
and so let's see where you riff and so please.
So the soul nerve or the vagal nerve, man, when I was getting some training in this through Peter Levine's somatic experience, one of the first things that happened, man, is see one of my organized, so I have these organizing rubrics, right? So there's these different things, kind of rubrics that I start with, that if I don't start with those, what ends up happening is that people think I'm saying something other. People think that I'm saying the same things that they've heard other people say. Mm-hmm. So I have to set up the rubric first, right? And the first, one of my first rubrics is that we are energy having a human experience. Right. That's from mm-hmm. one of my mentors, Dr. David Snarsh. And he used to always say that we are energy having a new human experience. And we the idea of getting it right is a misnomer. What you have to do is think. So when I'm training therapists, one of the things that therapists say, and I actually got this from a friend of mine named Leticia Nieto. She said that when therapists come in and train, one of the things that they want to do is that they want tools, right? They want tools to put in their toolbox. Can Resmer, can you, you know, Leticia, can you give me some tools so I can put in my toolbox so I can work with Black people, so I can work with Indigenous people, so I can work. And if I got the tools, then I can work with them. And one of the things that she said, and I think it's so brilliant, one of the things that she said is she had her students one time, they were asking her, she said, close your eyes. So actually, I'm going to do it with you. Close your eyes. Mm-hmm. And I want you to think of a toolbox. Just think of a toolbox. Think of the things that are in a toolbox. You got screwdrivers. You got wrenches. You got hammers. You got tools. Things that are in there to fix something. There's a particular tool for a particular thing to fix. Right? Now think of a toy box. Yeah, notice that. Notice that. Just let that be for a second. Toy box suggests exploration. I don't know if this is going to work, but I can try it. And when it comes to healing, many of us think about it as a toolbox as opposed to a toy box. And the vagal nerve for me fits into the toy category. Mm-hmm. How do you play with it long enough to notice the small, subtle discernments that show up in the body as intelligences? How do you condition and temper your body to get your reps in, so you can discern between constriction and resource, and then notice when the constriction is actually, the fuel of constriction is actually turning in to metabolize fuel for your freedom. How do you notice that if you have not learned how to develop discernment? And what I talk about in terms of somatic abolitionism is discernment around race specifically. Mm-hmm. Not everything else, race and the concept of race specifically. How do you begin to work with your body and other bodies so you can begin to discern this and not assume that your cognition will get you all the way across the finish line? That's the piece. The vagal nerve is really about exploration, not fixing a problem with this specific tool. And so one of the things I've been saying to people is that when it comes to the human body is an antenna. It is an amplifier, and it is a receiver all at the same time. And most of our dials are tuned to white supremacy, because we've been soaked into it. It's tuned into white body supremacy. It's tuned into the white body being the supreme standard by which all bodies' humanity shall be measured structurally and philosophically. It is tuned to that station. And in order to get it tuned to a different station or different frequency or different intelligences, you must begin to condition and temper your body so your body even knows the difference between the static that it's picking up and a real signal. And most of us are not willing to do that, especially white bodies. White bodies are so fucking frozen on that dial that to suggest that there is a beautiful R&B station a little ways down the road when you only used to listening to Garfunkel and Simon or whoever the fuck.
You nailed that one. That's fucking as good as it gets.
Right? You gotta tell them there's some good James Brown down. You know, a little while, you know, go turn some Parliament or something on, right? You can't, man, this is one of the reasons why I'd say to white folks, it's going to take at least 9 generations before y'all know what the fuck is going on with race. The nuance and the discernment collectively has not even been broached in the larger white collective, right? No. You have individual white people that go, "Oh, I had some insight. Oh, yeah. Oh my God!" Right? You have that, but not it as a collective cosmology, right? There is no, that does not exist for white folks. And that's why I say it's going to take at least 9 generations before they know what's going on with this.
Well, and so much of our privilege is to turn down the dial, to like hear this podcast and be like, not me, I got a black friend. Or I listen to Usher. You know,
I got a black baby. I used to fuck black dudes or whatever it is. You're like, whatever it is, any way to get me away from those white people. Though I can divorce myself from those white people, and then I can feel better about what I'm doing. Like I had a friend, like I can't tell you how many high school friends I done lost since Trump or since right. Because his, that ilk, since Trumpism, not Trump, but Trumpism, that ilk made it possible for people to voice that ignorant shit, right? And so I'd be go, okay, yep, we cool, we're done, right? right? So one of the things that I think we really that I really am trying to stress is that when it comes to race, white people have to begin to stop looking for the magical Negro. Right. I'm not a guru. I'm not your magical Negro. I'm not your guru. I say inappropriate shit sometime. I drink Crown Royal. I get into arguments with my fam. All of that shit. I'm not your guru. As a matter of fact, the guruship stuff actually, I believe, sets white folks up. Right. And it also sets white women up to be preyed on. Because one of the things that I'm noticing is that this, when it comes to this somatic abolitionist stuff, when it comes to racial stuff, it has kind of people, it's in the field right now, right? And what happens is that when you're trying to usher in something that may begin to structure things, what happens is that you end up having it so people who really want to do it start to begin to come out and start to begin to be a little more open to it. But the other thing that you start to see come out are predators. Mm-hmm. And people, and I think the white community, and white women specifically, don't understand that just because somebody is talking a good game about racial stuff or talking a good game about something, that does not mean that they are not predators. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've been pushing back really heavy on this guru stuff or trying to find the magical Negro or the magical Asian or the magic, right? That it takes white people away from working with each other.
From ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you in the podcast that you did with Jason, and you, in your book, you speak to, you have this beautiful way of articulating that. Well, first off, even the recognition that white body violence existed far before it got redirected and projected and focused outwardly, instead of looking at our own shit, like even how race was created. Like,
that's right.
It's mind-blowing when you get to the history of this. And so let's like first look at that, like how that came from Europe, just to give people just this sample of like, how was race created? And then, because I think of this, like, we can't be pulled away from ourselves. Like, this work of going back within, of saying, like, you talk about how unhealed trauma starts to look a lot like personality. Yeah. Can you, because that hit, and I shared that with, I work with a group of men, like a group of friends. And when I shared that with them, we were all like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so please, yeah.
So the way that I talk, this is another rubric, right? Mm-hmm. So trauma, time itself, just the march of time, decontextualizes trauma, right? So if me and you, Mark, are doing something, and right now, me and you are talking, and somebody comes in over here and puts a gun to my head, and you watch it, right? And you're like, man, what the fuck? And dude this beats me down and hurts me and stuff like that. And then let's say 3 weeks later, you call me, right? And we're on a call and I jump up and I'm butt ass naked and I'm acting crazy. I'm like, hey, motherfucker, right? And I'm acting crazy. If I do that, you go say, ho, man, we got to find, does somebody know Bresma up there? We got to find a number. I think that shit that happened to him last week fucked him up. Mm-hmm. There's context, right? What you're doing is you're putting context to it,
yeah.
Right? Now, imagine if you never saw that happen to me and I got on a call with you butt ass naked going, doing that, right? Yeah. Now the context is different, right? There's seemingly no context. So you would go, man, what the fuck is wrong with Resma? Not what happened to Resma, right? Mm-hmm. So time decontextualizes trauma. Trauma in a person over time can look like personality. Trauma in a family over time can look like family traits. Trauma in a people over time can look like culture. Part of the work that white people have to do that's different than bodies of culture, white people actually literally have to do work around rehumanizing themselves because they gave up part of their humanity to participate in whiteness, right? And so what happened in the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages was a seeding process. It's what I call a seeding process. You don't know what's going to sprout up from that seed, but you know, but when you put the seeds in, you have some indication that something's going to pop up at some point, right? And so the brutality that elite white bodies perpetrated on poor white bodies, on the peasant class, on those those that they were the landlords of, those that they would steal land from, those that they would rape, all of that stuff that was happening in the dark and Middle Ages, right? That shit happened for 1,000 years. Think about that, man. That happened with elite white bodies destroying, ripping apart, raping, and stealing land from less elite white bodies. That happened for 1,000 years. And then 13th and 14th and 15th centuries, those same brutalized white bodies started moving out, right? Mm-hmm. And starting, and as they moved out, none of that trauma for that 1,000 years ever got dealt with. None of it. No. It never got healed. It never got managed. And it looked like culture. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. Then they come face to face with somebody that looked like me. They come face to face with somebody that looks like an indigenous person. They come face to face with somebody who looks different, whose sense of self is a little bit different. They don't necessarily not necessarily tied to the structures of capitalism or the structures of don't mean that people want warring, doesn't mean any of that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there's a different vibratory way that they saw themselves connected to creation that wasn't necessarily beat out of them the way that it was during Europe, in Europe, right? So all of that brutality, all of that seeding, as that brutality and seeding is taking place and now beginning to look like culture with no reprieve. That's the thing about trauma. The stuckness of trauma is allowed to create roots when there's no reprieve from it, mm-hmm. right? And so what ended up happening was that as those bodies began, those brutalized poor bodies, white bodies, began to emerge up out of that, right? When you are brutalized, you don't just learn the victimization pieces. You also learn the perpetrator pieces. It's called the victim-perpetrator underbelly, right? So what ended up happening was that the same thing that was done to them, they began to replicate. Right? In terms of positioning, understanding how the world works. And so by the time elite white bodies here in America, who had started before America became America, but had started to steal the land and do all that, by the time they offered poor white folks the idea of being white, and this came after the Bacon Rebellion, right? Right after the Bacon Rebellion, is when you start to begin to see things ensconced in law that didn't talk about merchant class or didn't talk about, you know, the owner class. They started creating laws that said white persons. So at that moment, see, the race question in this country is actually not a race question the way we think about it. It's actually a species question. The race question is a species question. It's always been the species question. When they started talking about race, they were saying race of dog, race of cat, blah, blah, blah. And they used that same nomenclature to talk about humans, right? And so the idea of being classified as white is a species question, right? Mm-hmm. Is Resma a monkey? And is Resma less, is a other human? That is a species question. That's not a race, just pigmentation question. That is species. And so that's why when you begin to talk about race, it never gets very deep, because we keep thinking that we're just talking about, you know, the bad things that people did. We're actually talking about an underlying philosophy around who is human and how do you use and using the white skin pigmentation as a shorthand for humanness.
That's versus not.
Versus not. That's the whole piece. It is white. The white skin was when you say the white body is the supreme standard by which all bodies humanity shall be measured. That philosophically and structurally, that measurement is predicated on pigmentation as shorthand for human.
Right.
So you have the white skin and the white body as human, and then the black and indigenous, the black body as non-human, and the indigenous body as invisible.
Mm. So even a hierarchy within the species conversation.
That's it. And so everything else that's away from the white body is a deviance, not just of pigmentation, but a deviance of humanness.
And that's where dehumanization occurs.
That's right. That is the rubric. And we don't talk about it in that way. We want to talk about it in all of these kind of aesthetic ways. There's a depth. There's a philosophical and structural depth to this thing. Right. So this is why you can have somebody like the president, Barack Obama, and his wife and his children be characterized as monkeys. Right? That's an old kind of philosophical trope within that idea, right? And so what you end up having is wherever you go, the darker somebody gets, I don't care where you go, I don't care if you go to India, I don't care if you go to wherever you go in the white body supremacy thing, the further you go from white, the more you start to see monkey caricatures.
Mm.
The more you start to see dehumanization caricatures, right? The more you start to begin to work with that trope. That's because that is woven into those pieces. And that's what I mean, that the seeding took place in Europe. That seeding of, you mean to tell me, when by the time elite white bodies offer poor white bodies the chance to be white, right? Yeah. They said, do you want to be white? And white folks said, you mean that if I'm white, there's a chance that my children may not have to get this shit? They may be able to do.
Sign me up.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck, I got it. Yeah, I'll take that. Right. I can't see myself in connection with these black Africans or connection with these indigenous. I can't fuck with that. Right. If I'm white, if I'm not white and I see that they get in the boot like I'm getting the boot, all of a sudden now that's a problem for those that are in power. Right. And remnants of the reckoning of that is what you saw on January 6th. Right. When they attack the Capitol and you see all of this rage and all of this, these dissonance, right? You have people that are saying America first while they're carrying a fucking rebel flag, right? They're saying America first while they're talking about Jews will not replace us. They say America, right? They're doing all of this bullshit. Right. They're talking about how they respect America, but they go into the state capitol and literally shit on the floors. I mean,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They shit and piss all in there. And then and here all of the custodians who are mostly black poor and indigenous and indigenous and Mexican people have to go and clean up all of that shit in that poop.
Just more of it.
You see what I mean? That's so when I'm talking about the Middle Ages, I'm talking about how the seeding of that brutality took place and how by the time it got here and they started to begin to offer, right? And this took place all over the world. So here's one of the things I always tell people, especially people who are fucking smart from Spain or fucking smart from England, right? One of the things that they always say, well, that's a problem over there in the United States. We don't have that problem. Listen, there were five superpowers of the time. Spain, England, France, Portugal, and Belgium. Those five superpowers had an agreement of discovery, a doctrine of discovery. You ever heard that?
No.
Doctrine of discovery is this agreement that they made that says, if you come upon a land and that land is not inhabited by savages or people other than white, you need to leave that fucking land alone because they have now discovered that land. It's called the doctrine of discovery, right? That organized the whole slave shit because now what happens is first they showed up on the indigenous people and worked them to death and stole their gold and genocided them, right? But there was an agreement among all of those superpowers around who was human and who was not. These are all of the five European superpowers. This is one of the reasons why I had a sister from Mexico when I was doing a speech once, and she blew me away. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna remember that. She said, yeah, remember this. She said, when did people in now that's what's known as Mexico, when did they start speaking Spanish?
Yeah,
not Spanish. Spanish. And I was like, I never thought about that. She goes, yeah, we didn't always speak Spanish. Those are the people that conquered me. The same way you speak English is because those are the people that conquered. You see what I mean? It shifts the way you understand this piece. And those five superpowers then created all of these colonies, right? And then they brought in religion and brought in, you know, Christianity to soften the ground. So, you know, Desmond Tutu said, you know, the people came and they asked us to pray with them and closed our eyes and handed us the Bible. And when we opened our eyes, we had the Bible. They had the land. Right. right. And that's why I talk about white body supremacy, not just white supremacy. Right. Is because there is a seeding and all of that stuff that I'm talking about, brother, has never gone anywhere.
Well, we've never talked about it even in school. I grew up in Canada and, you know, you don't learn about that. You don't That's learn right. about everything because we don't even have the capacity to hold the shame of our own history, which I think about, which is, of course, nervous system work. And, you, and right. your book walks through that tremendously of like broadening your own window of tolerance just to know you even have a fucking short, even if you have a window, you got a crack.
That's exactly right.
And if people are listening to this and they're like, can't hold it, it's like, hold it. Like, leave this on.
Hold it. Hold
right. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to realize you were propagandized into believing that you were superior and you don't even realize you think that.
That's right.
You did a beautiful job of articulating that in the way that you talked about diversity and inclusion.
Training. Oh, shit.
Can you speak to that? Because that gave me some context to be like, oh, that's how you explain it. Like, people that's don't. Right. We're like, so yeah, can you get into that?
So here's the thing, man. The thing about, so we use nomenclature. See, if we're going to actually change this thing, we're going to actually have to develop culture. We're going to actually have to develop a living, embodied, anti-racist culture and practices. It ain't enough to have fucking epiphanies and go eat kale and talk to people about fucking, you know, how your daddy used to march with Martin Luther King. That shit ain't going to get it. Your racialized resume ain't going to get it. You're going to have to put some work and skin into this. And you're going to have to do it for the next 30 years, the next 60 years, and the next 100 years. You're going to have to do it. And white folks are going to have to do it with each other. And so One of the kind of word nomenclatures that we use and we all nod about is diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, let's do one of those trainings.
Yes, do a diversity and inclusion training. And I'll tell you, in most organizations, when Black people and Indigenous people hear about a diversity and inclusion training, we fucking go, what day is my vacation? Okay, how many vacation days do I have? Right? Yeah. And the reason why we do that shit, man, is because many times we go into these types of trainings and white people come out of it enlightened and Black people come out of it wounded. And it is because white people, we're not speaking the same languages, the same embodied language, the same understanding. So when I'm talking about diversity, I'm saying it in a particular way. So diversity, if you don't ask the question, diverse from what? If you don't ask that question, diversity is going to mean collard green Tuesday, taco quinceanera Wednesday. It's going to mean all of this fucking like aesthetic stuff, yeah. Right? But if you, because when we talk about diversity, we're saying we're starting with something first and then we're diversifying from it. We're moving away from it in order to make it more open, right? Diversity, right? But if you never ask the question, what are we diversifying from? If you never ask that, then what ends up happening is that diversity becomes, the term diversity becomes useless because it doesn't really hold up to the weight of what race actually is, right? This whole thing around race is a has a 400 to 500 year old charge to it. So if you can't even start with saying we're diversifying from the idea that the white body is the supreme standard by which all bodies humanity shall be measured, if you can't start with that, then what you're doing is you're trying to gaslight people into thinking that it's just about people being nice to one another. Right? The same thing with inclusion. You start with something first and then you're saying you're trying to include things into that thing that you start with. Same thing. You're trying to include more ideas, more representation, more understanding into that idea in order to broaden it so it can be helpful to more people. That's what you're saying. But if you never start with, I'm trying to include more things into the idea and break apart the idea that the white body is the supreme standard, but which all about, right? If you don't start with that, then it can mean absolutely anything. And that's why when we come out of those things, a lot of times we end up being wounded because we end up getting asked questions. So what does that mean? And then white people say, well, that's not really what, and that's not, and bodies of culture are sitting there going, how dare you even open your mouth to even say anything about race? You don't even have a collective discernment or understanding around how to move through this. But yet you're going to tell me about somebody you read or something or somebody you used to date that used to tell you about or some dude you played basketball with. That's your rubric for what's happening to me and people that look like me. Listen, think about this for a minute. People that look like me and look like my mother were raped for 200 years legally. Legally. To create a product that was my children. You can't fucking tell me anything if you are not going through. This is why fucking white allies will drive me up the fucking wall. Don't tell me you're an ally. Who are your people? You tell me you're an ally, first thing I'm going to ask you is, who are your people? Who are the people that you have decided you're going to create and living embodied anti-racist culture with for the next 30 years? If you can't tell me that, don't tell me you're an ally. Because the moment you cut your blonde fucking dreadlocks off and go move out to Orange County, nobody ever know you was in the mix. Don't tell me you're an ally. How would I know you're an ally without you telling me? What's the culture you are cultivating that's showing me that you have allyship? Not what you're saying, not the workshops you, not because you read my grandmother's hands, because I'm still dealing with the fact that my mama's was raped legally for 200 years. That the men and the women and the children and anybody, because rape is about power, everybody was raped. I'm still dealing with the flow of that down here. And you're going to tell me about Kendi X's book or My Grandmother's Hands or that you read White Privilege?
So what are you doing?
What are you doing? Literally, how are you ushering in a culture of anti-race? Listen, the people at January 6th have culture. They have song, they have color, they have colors, they have creeds, they have understanding, they know who's the enemy, who's not. They have all of that. They know how they're going to bury each other, all of that shit. What you got as a white ally? If you can't answer that, stop telling me that. Mm-hmm. It is wounding, it is hurtful, and it is unhelpful. Do the work. Mark, I had a dude tell me, Resma, I love your book. Oh my God. Your book is amazing. I've learned so much from your book. I got your book on a Friday and I finished it on a Sunday. I stopped it. I said, you didn't get a goddamn thing out of that book. There's nothing you can get out of that book by reading it straight through in 2 days, because the most important part of that book is the practices. Mm-hmm. Over and over and over and over and over and over again. Because in the practices, you learn the discernment. In the practices, you learn, like you said earlier, you learn what's subtle. Damn, I didn't even know my body did. Right? I don't like that. Oh, fuck, that's horrible, right? And you work with it and you hold it and you don't try and yoga the shit away or Buddhist the shit away, right? White folks can yoga the fuck out of anything. Like, stuff that y'all supposed to hold and allow that heat to cook you,
yes.
You own the shit out of you. It's gone. Stop doing that.
Wash it down with the green juice, right?
Wash it down with green juice and a side of kale. Y'all, it will be done. Gotta stop. Let me just say this last thing. This is why white people cannot tolerate, the collective white people cannot tolerate a racial discussion. Because there has been no practice.
Yeah, there's right? No capacity, right?
There's no capacity. Yeah. Literally, as a collective, there is no capacity. This is why you can see the same thing show up every time when you do these types of things around race. You see the same patterning. You see either the collapse, right? You see the rage response, right? You see the confusion response. You see you see all of it, but it's all of these pieces that show up. As I said, it's because. Because you have not, because everybody else has been raced, right? You haven't had to, I don't use the term privilege anymore. White people don't have privilege. White people have advantage, right?
Yeah.
This is the difference, right? Advantage suggests that if you are in a white body and you're born in a society that's constructed around the white body being the standard of humanness, that is an advantage before you even learn how to speak.
It's innate, yeah.
It's innate. It's not innate. It's structural. It's structural, right? Is that the white body is imbued with, because the structure is organized around the white body being the standard. The moment that you are born in a white body, you are advantaged differently than a black body or a brown body or an indigenous body. White people don't even know how to get to the nuance of that. They haven't had to because they've been standardized.
I appreciate that. You don't even the distinction between privilege and advancement, because you realize you don't even know about the advancement, because that's part of why the system's made. You don't even, you're never going to know about it, because you're just going to keep getting advanced.
That's right. That's right. You don't even, when you're advantaged by something, you don't even notice it. You don't even have, because you don't have to, because your sense of self is not in peril. I cannot move in this world without understanding race, without understanding white body supremacy, without understanding white comfort. I cannot move in this world because if I'm a black man, and I, like, just very simple, if I'm a black man, I decide I'm going to Walgreens to pick up my prescription, and some white lady bumps into me. And I say, what the fuck? You're like, what's going on with you? And she starts screaming at the top of her lungs. My life is literally in peril. Hers is not.
Yeah.
That's advantage.
Right,
that's
right
not
away.
Privilege. That's advantage. And she knows it. Even if she never articulates it, she knows that advantage is there. It is in the water. It is in the air, right? White people don't even have to consider that. That's why whenever we begin to sit down and start to talk about race, they don't have any efficacy with how to work it. And Black people and Indigenous people sitting there looking like, I'm being wounded by this shit. I don't even want to be here with y'all. I really don't want to even be here with you. Because every time I open my mouth and tell you something or try and work with you about something, you're going to tell me something that is the exact opposite, or you're going to send a vibe that pierces me. Mm. Right? So this is why when I do my work, I don't do it with black bodies and white bodies and bodies of culture in a room together. I break them apart. When I give an assignment to go, you go do this, work that shit up, because you ain't gonna blow it through me and you ain't gonna blow it through them.
Yeah, you use that language, blow through, and I really liked that because it gave some context even to how the male body and patriarchy blows through women.
That's right.
Right. Fascinating. Interesting. Can you speak to just what that sort of means? And
so
the
blow through
that?
Blow through is it, so a lot of my work is around energy, not energy like, ooh, let me stick a crystal in your nose and some shit like that, right? I'm talking about
you do stand up comedy too, seriously. It's like transformational comedy I'm experiencing. Like my soul's being shifted and I get to laugh, which opens me up. I got it.
Man, laugh is healing, man. It's healing. This mm-hmm. shit is hard enough, man. This is the toy box stuff that I'm talking about, right? The shit is deadly serious. And we have to have spaces where we can begin to work with this, right? And because this shit is hard on us, man. Black folks and Indigenous people walk through this shit. And it's hard, man. Every day this shit is hard, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have decided, you know, within the last year, I'm going to start laughing a little bit more because I can go, part of my upbringing and part of the way I've been organized is to motherfucker do something to you or get at you. Just go rip that motherfucker's throat out. Just go fuck him, right? Let's get it. You want to fuck with me? Fuck you, right? And I'm trying to learn. I'm starting to get better at. There are times where you got to do that, but right? there are times where you just got right. But then there are times where I don't need to do anything, right? It's just let it land, let it do what it needs to do. So you had asked me a question. I totally forgot what it was
about. It was the blowing through the body.
The blowing through, right? So if we're talking about energy, right? We know that when like, are you married?
No, partnered.
Okay. Okay. So, female, male.
Yeah, Kylie is her name.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, how long y'all been together?
6 years now.
Okay. How'd you meet? Just a little brief.
Instagram, yo.
Instagram.
Yeah. Tinder, yeah.
So, yes. So, how'd you meet in person? Like, when'd you meet in person?
She came out to Vancouver to visit.
Yeah, she came out to Vancouver with it. Do you remember, like, when you first saw her in person? Do you remember, like, the vibe that happened to
you?
Yeah.
I remember being like, damn, I did good here.
I did good. It's all right. That's all right.
Oh, you know,
that's right. Yeah. So that's not a cognitive thing that's happening right there. That right. is the yeah. body. That is the amplifier. That is the receiver. That is the antenna,
resonance.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the resonance, right? That is another human being that there's something that said, and you picked up early on, probably, she had some sense of that with you too, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Like she was like, yeah, I did all right, too. You know, I did all right. 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 Right.
Sounds just so, like
so you pick, up on that. Right.
Yeah.
That's vibratory. Right. And so the six intelligences are vibratory, images and thoughts, dreams and images, meaning making, behavior and urges, affect and feeling, and sensations. Those are the six intelligences. We only give credit to cognition, to thought, right? But there's all these other intelligences, right, that we can literally hone to help us discern what's going on, right? So when we get into a room with white bodies, when bodies of culture get into a room with white bodies, one of the things that happens is is that we are vibratorily, because of where we come from and how we come in this structure, we are vibratorily picking up on things you don't even know you're giving off, because our very sense of survival has been predicated on picking up on those pieces.
Attunement.
Like, that's right.
We've had safety. Is this person volatile? Is this person?
That's right. Yeah. And even if the cognition is that, is this person volatile? Even if it's like, right? Even if it's not
comes like, off, right?
Like, yeah, it just comes. That's right. The same vibe that you and Kylie did with each other is this, that's also what we get tuned into, right?
Right.
So when white folks are in that room and they're and we already know that they don't know how to work this stuff specifically around race, and they start see, the black body and the indigenous body is where America has always done its dirt. The things that I'm talking about, the setup for race and stuff like that, existed before America even became America. America didn't become America Incorporated until 1776. The shit that I'm starting to talk about is started in the 1600s, right? It was already old before America even decided it was going to be its own thing, right? And it, before the Constitution, before the preamble, before any, right, before, you know, fucking Washington chopped down the cherry tree, whatever it is you want, whatever little thing you want to put in there, right? Before any of that stuff, this philosophy, this structure, this relationship was created. And the relationship was created not just around law, but around vibes, but around images and thoughts, but around meaning, right? All of that stuff. And so when we're in that room, we already know our bodies is where it has been, where America has positioned, where it does its dirt, right? Mm-hmm. So when you don't do something, or you do something, or you intimate that you've done something or could have done something, that is a blowing through, because you haven't examined it. You haven't interrogated it. You haven't looked at it with you and other white bodies for 5, 10, 15 years. You haven't done any of that. And so every time you open your mouth, or every time you cross your eyes, or every time you say something, or every time you tisk, or every time you do that, there is a literal blowing through. There is an energetic blowing through. That's why I say we have to be respectful of that energy. We have to be respectful of that charge, and we have to let white people begin to cook that shit with themselves first, so they can even develop some discernment around what it is, rather than my body being the way you play that shit out.
Where I deflect that heat, I put all it through you.
Me. Yeah, put it through me. And then you walk out feeling better, and I walk out feeling like, if I see your ass in the hall coming down to this next meeting, I'm going to elbow smash your ass. Or I need to stay the fuck away from you. Or, right? I need to protect
myself. Your somatic experience is that you're not, I don't respect your somatic boundaries, because I don't even know how to understand where I end and someone else begins.
That's right. I don't even know that anything even happened.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Isn't that so interesting?
That's right. That's right. White folks walk out of that, don't even know something happened. And black people are talking with each other. And indigenous people are talking with each other. Did you hear what she said? Yeah, I didn't like that. I didn't, you know, she was fucked up anyway. So I didn't, right? You know what I mean? That's the conversation that's happening, because y'all are oblivious. You don't even have to, contend with this stuff. And so let me put it to you like this. You know how I'm talking about how I'm saying the stuff that I have to do and work through, and when I get ready to go and do something, I have to consider the idea of what's the racial pieces that might show up in something that should just be a very benign interaction and all that, and you know how. And I know that the way that I'm talking, it's got some heat to it and all that different type of stuff. Now think about this. This is one of the things I say when I do my trainings. I say, when I'm working with black bodies, I said, think about how when you get up in the morning and you have to go do something, the things you have to consider before you get to this place, how you might have to code switch, how you might have to use your white voice in this particular thing, how you might have to use this, how you might have to use that, right? Now think about all of those things you have to do before you even leave the house. Now think about the fact that white people don't have to consider any of that.
Yeah.
Think about the freedom that's, right? Not to say that white people don't deal with gender discrimination, don't deal with violence, don't deal with deal with all that. But they ain't got to deal with this.
Well, you think how much cognition that takes up, how much space.
Right. That's right. That's right. So that's what I'm so passionate about. This cannot be something that people just pick up for right now and say, yeah, that was a nice book and, you know, it really helped me. And then you don't do shit. You don't say, yeah, and I need to commit to this shit for the rest of my life because I don't want my white children growing up like this. I don't want them having to uncover this. I don't want them having to, you know, work with this in a way that makes them give up part of their humanity to participate in. I don't want that for my baby. So I am going to do what I need to do to make sure that this white body supremacy shit is abolished. If you ain't talking like that to me, I can't feel you.
Right. Like, are you participating in groups? Are you having conversations? Are you creating, if I hear what you're saying correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that are you contributing to the creation of culture that is inclusive of and witnessing the trauma that has been placed upon bodies of color, and also
bodies of culture.
So that's interesting because you mentioned that before too, and I was, so my mom is from Ireland, my dad is historically from other places and historically, and then the United States and Canada. And when I remember being at a talk where I was for sure the minority in the room, and it was great. And one of the facilitators said, do white people even think about culture as being like what your culture is? And my mom's like, you know, from Ireland, so she has a real commitment to her culture. But I never really thought about it. I was like, so I grew up in an inner city school. I had friends who were from all over the world. And one thing that I loved about going to their homes was this warmth and this culture, this and this connection to their homeland cultures.
Right,
and
right.
I felt so much love from being in those spaces. And in a way, I envied it.
Yeah.
And so you speak about that of like, when you think about white culture, it's like what, we don't think about that. We like try to co-opt other people's cultures.
Right.
Steal them, really appropriate them.
So that's the aesthetic shit that I'm talking about, right? So one of the things I think about appropriation is this, is that cultural appropriation is secondary to body appropriation. So what I mean by that is that the white structure has a sense of it that there is nothing about let me say it this way. For most of our history, Mark, for most of our history, you're in my history, the white body has had full and unfettered access to my body. It is relatively new that I can be on a call like this with you, talking the way that I'm talking to you, and be somewhat sure that there's not a lynch party upstairs waiting for me. That is new. That's not old. That's new. For most of our history, the white body has had full access to every thought, every orifice, every idea, every understanding, everything about me and bodies that look like mine. The white body has had full and unfettered access, right? That is not just a problem for me. That is also a problem for white people because white bodies expect my deference. And when they don't get it, they get uncomfortable. And when they get uncomfortable, black people lose lives, lose access, and lose abilities, right? That's the setup. That's not individual. That's structural. Mm-hmm. That's structural. So for me, this whole thing around bodies of culture is a reclaiming. It is to say that that one of the first manifestations of humanness is culture. And I am not a color. I'm a culture. And so I am reclaiming that. And what has happened in a couple of talks I've been to, and this fucks them up, but what has happened is that I've said that. I say bodies of culture, and then I say white body. And then inevitably, I have some smart white woman come up in there and say, I'm a culture too. I'm part Irish and I'm part this and I'm part that. And you know what I say? I wasn't talking to you. Mm. Your humanity has never been in question here. So your need to pop up and say that type of shit speaks to white supremacy and white body supremacy. You can't hold the fact that you are not considered in that term. Mm.
Like you can't even hold that discomfort. You need to be prioritized again.
You see what I mean? That's what I'm saying. That's it. just that piece suggests the hierarchy. When all I'm doing is saying I'm affirming your humanity, you cannot tolerate that without saying, well, what about me? You are not part of that equation. That is not a construct that you need, that needs to happen for you. Oh, by the way, as you're doing the work, I just came out with a new app. I don't know if you saw that.
No, what's your new app?
It's called Wiser, right? WYSER, Wiser.
Okay.
And if you go there, it's a companion book. It's a companion app to the book.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Do you have an Apple?
Yeah.
You have. Okay. Because I haven't gotten it. I haven't gotten the gotten it through Android yet. So just go to Apple and WYSER.
We'll make sure that we put the link to that in the show notes. Yeah, of course. When I think about everything that you're sharing, part of what, first off, you sharing the 200 years of, and just like unfeathered access to mm-hmm. the body, mm-hmm. I really felt the sort of grief and rage of the 200 years that you spoke to. And I really appreciate you just sharing so unfiltered, because what it does is I feel like when we're not talking about what you said about diversity, right? Like we're starting with something, including we're not including something. Something's already there and we're including more.
That's right.
When we're not actually contextualizing that starting point, we're not actually touching the truth. Like we're not, we're again perpetuating this, we can't talk about, but here we are talking about the thing that shall not be mentioned.
That's exactly right. Exactly
right. Right. And I feel like that's just more of that dancing around the nervous system response, that what you talk about, that energetic.
Right, right.
And when I, in hearing your words and the many times I've consumed them and then also right now, I feel like the sharing of what you're sharing, one is a call to action for all of us, for me too, to create, what kind of culture do I want to live in? You said like, mm-hmm. you know what? I want in 9 generations, mm-hmm. a little kid who's, mm-hmm. who's able, picking up this book and feeling witnessed.
That's right. Exactly like, right.
Am I creating a culture that witnesses my friends of culture?
That's it.
You know, and that acknowledgement of—
And are you creating a— That's right. And are you creating a culture that can hold a living, embodied, anti-racist practice and culture? And how do you, so simple as this,
yeah.
Mark, how are you going to get together with other people, and how y'all going to determine how you bury your dead? How are you going to determine how people become elders? How are you going to determine, you see what I mean?
Right.
Culture shit.
Community culture.
Community culture shit that's predicated on anti-racist practices, embodied anti-racist practices and cultures. Right? That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about getting together and cooking fucking sourdough bread. I'm not. Sourdough is fine.
But getting together and make being change.
Yes, I had a white woman, really interesting experience. I had a white woman who called me, and she called me when maybe about a year after my book was out. She goes, "Razma, your book is amazing, and we've got, here's what we're gonna do. Two things that white people do that kind of irritate the fuck out of me right now. One of them is they assume that because they read my grandmother's hands that they can now turn around and teach.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. It's like how disrespectful. So I've been doing this shit for 35 years, right? I've been on this earth for 55 years. I've been doing this shit, and you read one book. You read my book and you decide you're going to go teach it to other people. That's the first thing that pisses me off. The second thing is that white people get together and they assume that numbers of people mean success. So if they get 100 people that start something with them, they assume that that's success. And what I have had, and this white woman had it, she called me, she goes, "Resma, we're doing all this and we got this and we got 100 people that are showing up and they're coming every day and we're cooking and we're talking about this thing and we're doing the practices and we're doing this different type of stuff." And I said, "Call me in a year." She said, "We're committed to this. We're committed to this work. Call me." I said, "Call me in a year." Right? I'd never expected to hear from her again. She called me a little longer than a year. She called me about 14 months in. She called me and she goes, "Resma, do you have time to talk?" Because she hit me on Facebook. "Do you have time to talk?" I said, "Yeah." So I got on the phone. She said, I said, "Before you say anything else, how many people y'all down to?" She said, 9. I said, "So what did you learn in this process?" She goes, "I've learned, you had said this before, but I didn't quite understand. I thought we were going to be the exception. Your people are not the people you start with. Your people are the people that you end with."
Amen.
So your 100 are not your people. Those are just people who show up for whatever reason that they show up to at that particular time. I said, "How long y'all 9 been together?" She said, about I think at that time, 6 or 7 weeks. I said, "Who's ever left in like 3, 4, 5 months, those would be your people." Mm. And she goes, I didn't understand what you were saying when you first started saying that. I did not understand. She goes, "I kept saying, we're an exception, we're an exception." And she goes, "Resma, this shit is hard." I said, "You telling me?"
Yeah, right.
"You telling me this? You sitting up here thinking that because of all of the white folks that's showing up to this that have cars, that have babysitters, that have all of this, you that they really doing something because they coming across town and doing something with you?" It's like I said, the moment the next thing jumps up that they want to do, this thing will be something in the rearview mirror because it's not culture. If you're about that culture, then you're going to do this for the next 30 years. Otherwise, it's performative.
It's integrated. It becomes part of your cell, your makeup.
Your very anatomy. It becomes part of the way that your body receives the intelligences, the way that the antenna picks up on certain things, the way that you amplify without saying a word.
How you move through the world.
Yeah. You move through the world. But that's because you have conditioned and tempered. That's because you've been grinding up against other white bodies or other bodies of culture, and you getting it and you understanding it and you're moving. And then all of a sudden, you notice that there's more room and that room is vibrating, right? Mm. That's literally vibrating. The same way you said with Kylie. It vibrated. Mm-hmm. If somebody said, "Well, what are you feeling at this moment?" You'd be like, "I'm just feeling good." You know what I mean? Right? It's that people can see it. Like I even see it on your face right now. Like just this big, cheesy ass fucking grin. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's vibrating. But people ain't taking the time to do that work in the context of race.
It seems to me imperative for the context of any connection, you know, like I think about like, I'm curious, what do you think it is that causes 100 to go to 9 or to 6 or to, you know, like 9% sucks, you know? So what do you think it is that, or what can we do?
No capacity. And white people think that it is, that there is a payoff. There's some type of payoff. They're going to get something, right? There's a payoff. If I'm nice, then there should be a payoff with this, right? But when you say there ain't no fucking payoff, the payoff is that your children are better human beings. The payoff is that the sickness of white body supremacy doesn't get passed all the way through the rest of your generations. That's the payoff. But you ain't going to be alive to see it. That's the payoff. See, that's a different type of legacy work.
Love, man.
Yeah. It's a legacy work, right? Legacy work is really about, okay, I ain't gonna see this. And I really don't have any interest in seeing it, right? What I need to do is do the things that I'm supposed to do now to seed the ground the same way that white folks seeded the ground in Europe, right? They seeded the ground by beating the shit and taking and stealing and raping white folks, poor white people, right? And they seeded the ground. And then in the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th century, it germinated into whiteness, right? We got to be about that. If we are about a different understanding, then we got to be about that business of seeding the ground now.
It feels like such a that connection back to the holistic aspect of everything, you know, mm-hmm. like
creation itself,
right?
It is create. So I say we have to move from race to culture to creation, right? It is literally back to creation itself. That's right.
And then how can I be fully connected to the planet, the earth, the atmosphere, if I can't be fully connected within my own body, but then even be resonant with yours, you know, because we're not going to be connected if I don't have the capacity. How you said contextualizing trauma was really powerful for me, because I think of like one of my good friends when I was growing up was from Haiti. And now when you were talking, I only ever grew up with him and interacted, you know, we were best friends, but I never contextualized that or even like thought of anyone's reactivity being outside when you said, like, if you don't see the gun to the head.
Right.
But you're saying like, this isn't about 3 weeks ago or this person's lifetime. It's about generations, your That's own right. too. And you're not even That's looking right. back going, That's right. why is it okay to traumatize people?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine if white people, If there was a sect, let me just say this. Imagine, now just think about this, man. Imagine that there were in the United States just a thousand white people that said, you know what? We're going for the next 10 years. We are going to work on dealing with the pain and the brutality that our ancestors received from other white people. We're just going to hold and we're just going to grind on that. We're going to see how and what are the roots that come from us not addressing it, but beginning to address it. That we are going to do it through the body, and we're going to like you just said something. You said you had a friend from Haiti, and this is what I was talking about the five superpowers, right? That France fucked Haiti, mm-hmm. right? But we want to act like that was in the past. This is, I call this HIP theory, historical, intergenerational, persistent, institutional, and your own personal traumas end up combining together, right? So when something happens personally, it reverberates historically, it reverberates intergenerationally, reverberates all the way through, right? Mm-hmm. And so white people have to begin to heal that brutalness and heal that stuff, not just getting together. So, and this is another thing that white folks do. So you say, okay, you say, go do something and go start doing something and working with just race. And before you know it, 3 weeks later, every one of them motherfucker got on Irish kilts or they playing with Russian dolls or some shit, right? Right? because now all of a sudden they want to claim culture and then never and not deal with race. Right? So it's just, no, No, you got to deal with the brutality of this race shit. Just because you decided you Irish now don't mean that all of the shit that was done in the white name no longer needs to get wiped off the table.
Oh, God, right? In Ireland alone.
You see, but see, that these are all dodges that white folks have got to deal with. They got to deal with this shit and the pain, like the brutality of what happened to the Irish people, right? Mm-hmm. And then they came here and became white. So I can't tell Irish people, unless it's St. Paddy's Day, I can't tell them the difference from the average white dude walking on the street. Mm-hmm. You have to give up something in order to participate in whiteness. And white people have done it. Italian people have done it. Russian people. This is why people who just get here, who don't speak good English, get the sense that they are more superior than Black people. Mm-hmm. New white immigrants already know before they get here that they are white and Russian, white and Bosnian, white. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
We're the only ones that go, well, they're Russian, but they're, no, they're both.
Yeah.
They get there is an ethos around the white body itself. Before any dialect comes out of the mouth, there is an ethos around whiteness and the white body being the superior.
Yeah, you speak to that in the book about walking into a room and how do you feel and like going into that somatic exploration. And I found that really powerful because I never would have thought like, you know, walking into a room filled with bodies of culture being like, but I felt this subtle, I mean, I grew up around bodies of culture, but I still felt this subtle sense of constriction.
That's it.
I didn't want to be like, ooh, that's constriction, you know, but I was in the safety of your book. So I was now I'm on a podcast to 400,000 people, but still I'm like, which is great. Cause you know, but then the whole, I know how to hold shame in on some capacity. I can always expand that. But I was like, oh, what's here? Like, when has my energetic shifted when I'm in a group of people who are so safe and wonderful and they felt it and then they constrict?
That's it.
You know?
That's it. That's it. See, this is why I talk about somatic abolitionism, right? Is that if you don't start with the body first, you will intellectualize the fuck out of this stuff. You won't you won't slow down long enough and pause long enough to even know that there is there. Right. And so for me, that's why the work that I'm doing for me is so, I'm so passionate about it. And so, and feel like it's so important is because the moment you get people to pause, right, now they have to contend. And my thing is to get people to contend over and over and over and over and over and over and over. I have to do it. Mm-hmm. I got to contend over. My wife tells me something, man, I don't fucking like it. And if I want to stay with her and I want to grow up, I better start working this shit some type of way. I can't keep doing it this way. Right. It ain't going to work. And if it does work, she'll have to give up something that's important to her. And I still won't get what I think I deserve or want. Right?
Right.
So that's what I'm saying to white folks. That you can't be going into this stuff around somatic abolitionism because you want to have, you want to take care of Resma or take care of your Black friend. You're starting off in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. This ain't about me. Mm-hmm. This ain't got shit to do with me. This got everything to do with you and whether or not you're going to create a culture that can hold what you hold to be true in an embodied sense, right? Other than that, I don't really want to hear, I've gotten much more clear about this recently, bro. I don't want to hear nothing you got to say. I really don't. I don't want to hear your opinions about something. If I'm making a mistake about something, it's my mistake, and I get to make that honestly and work with it and pay the price for it or whatever it is. But when it comes to race, I have no room for white people trying to tell me anything about it. Ain't nothing. Absolutely nothing. And for me, it's really important that white folks start to begin to grapple with this shit themselves.
Well, I think of that separation or that example you gave about your wife. And whenever my partner gives me feedback, I have a similar response of like, fuck that. And I know it's an invitation to my
expansion. That's it.
I felt in your work in, you know, hearing you speak is different than consuming your book. Because
it is.
One thing about your words is that they do what you're saying, which is they hit you on a vibrational level that you might not like, but they hit you in a space of truth in your heart, in your soul. And your soul goes, there's actually something here. I feel like when I was consuming both sides of that, I could feel you inviting me to my edges. Like,
yeah.
And when I felt that subtle shift in my somatic experience, I could feel there be like grief and grace, you know, and I saw that like what I love about your work is you're not saying, hey, go figure out how you're racist and go do this on an intellectual level. Right. You're saying like this healing is actually for you because that's you right. have stuff that's not dealt with.
That's right.
And you're blowing it through all of us because you're not willing to look at your own stuff. And I think about how that is the same thing with how I allow power dynamics to exist based with my partner.
That's it.
Like,
that's
don't give me feedback. I'm a man. I'm too delicate, you know? And so I want to say thank you. I know that your time is the one thing you can't get back, depending on what dimensions we're talking about. But I'm so grateful for your work and so grateful that you so quickly made the time to be on the podcast with me. And if I can support your work and you in any way, you let me know. And
just keep talking, man. Keep pushing it. Keep talking. Keep talking to white folks. Keep pushing, man. When you're talking with other people and shit pops up, just land it. You know, man, you know, something was off here. There's something in race here or something that we got. Because people get so used to us, to black folks and indigenous folks bringing this stuff up. White men got to start stepping up with this shit because otherwise you will be the caricature of what was January 16th. Right. You can keep trying to divorce yourself from that and all that different type of stuff. But if you don't have a different culture, right, then January 16th becomes that kind of like, what's the word? Shorthand, right? That's what white men do, right? Like white comfort trumps black liberation. White comfort trumps indigenous sovereignty. White comfort trumps everything. And if white men don't start learning how to be getting, and everybody says it, you gotta get to your suffering's edge and you gotta be uncomfortable. You gotta get to be the You know what I mean? Everybody said that now, right? Ain't nobody doing it. Everybody said. Am I lying? Everybody said. No, you gotta get uncomfortable now. You gotta, you know, get to your suffering stage and namaste. You know, right? But we gotta. We literally, you have to do it in reps. You have to do like if I'm gonna get a better jumper, right? I'm gonna have to get in the gym when ain't nobody watching. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to get in there. I'm gonna have to get some invited reps in, and get my muscles to be able to respond in ways that they absolutely cannot. No matter how much I think that they should be, no matter how much I read that, oh, if I do this, then the angle of the shot should go in at a 40, right? Nothing is going to help me but to get in there and get the reps in. And I think what you can do as a white man is you can begin to say, "You come on my fucking show. We're going to get some reps in. I'm going to get some reps in with you. You're going to get some reps in with me. And I'm going to work. And we're going to work this." That's it.
Thank you so much. I'm honored. I'm for all the people listening. Let's tell them where to find more of you and all that.
Yeah. So first thing is if they go to Linktree. So linktr.ee/resma. Then get all my stuff there. They can go to resma.com. R-E-S-M-A-A, and they can get a free, if they get the book and start reading the book. Another thing that pisses me off is that people either do the workshop and they don't read the book and feel like they got it already, right? So read the book and do the practices and do the e-course and the app. And then if they go to those two places, they should be able to see it. And go get the book. You can get the book from the website. Oh, and for those, do you have people that listen to you from England or New Zealand?
Oh, yeah, everywhere. Yeah.
So the Monday, the book gets released in the UK.
Oh, this coming Monday. Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, I'll make sure that this, as people are listening to this, it is Monday.
Yeah.
You pick up that damn book.
That's it. I wrote a different forward to it to include the stuff about England. Right. So,
oh, that'll be powerful.
Yeah.
Well, yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
So appreciative of your time and your energy, and look forward to seeing your new book, which is what's that going to be on?
So that's going to be called Our Grandchildren's Souls. So it's basically doing taking the legacy. Yeah.
Oh, the legacy work. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. I look forward to hopefully having you back on to discuss that.
Oh, we will, man. We will. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.